Hi, I'm Richard van der Berg.
And I'm Duncan MacLeod.
This is Talk Central, episode 158 for the weekend starting 11 November 2016.
Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central, the home of South Africa's best technology journalism.
On Talk Central this week, we chat about Donald Trump. Just kidding, or are we?
Trump. He might come up. But there's plenty of other more interesting things to talk about this week, like the internet in South Africa is turning 25 years old this weekend.
Wow. Man, I feel old. That is incredible. That is incredible. Also this week, Fed Group's interesting new model to make money from solar panels. Exit Casa Chairman Stephen Mube dies, and SA firm predicted the Trump victory. And is Twitter dying?
Is Twitter dying? Oh, there's so much to get through this week. But let's get this machine rolling. Well, welcome to the show. How's it, Richard?
How's it, Duncan?
Let's do our quiz. You want to start?
Yes, I'll do it. First question. Who's the man, now retired, often credited with bringing the internet to South Africa?
Question two, Vodacom and MTN this week said they'll be launching what type of networks commercially in 2017?
Third question, which Silicon Valley billionaire has become an active backer of Donald Trump, angering many of his peers in the US tech industry?
I told you we weren't going to get away from Donald Trump. Fourth question, yeah. Which South African social media analytics company correctly predicted, oh God, here we go again, Donald Trump's victory against all popular polls suggesting the opposite?
And the last question. Exit Casa Chairman Stephen Mube died this week. He appointed the position in 2010 by which communications minister?
That's our quiz. What beer are we drinking?
So the beer I brought us today is from a awesome little brewery called Agar's Brewery. They're actually based up the road here in Kaya Sands. And this particular beer, now their range of beers are good. I love they've got a very great American pale ale, but this one to me is the one to get if you like a strong beer. It's a Tomahawk IPA, 6.5% alcohol by volume, and it is over 100 IBUs, and I say over 100 IBUs jokingly because, you know, you can't go over 100, but it's got quite a high bittering unit on the bittering unit scale.
I was going to ask, what is an IBU?
International Bittering Unit. It's just a measurement by which they would rate the bitterness of a beer, okay. And this one is pretty one high. Of the highest ones you'll find in South Africa. But
I have to concur with you. This
beautiful.
Is a fantastic beer. I mean, I love IPAs, but this is one of the best I've tasted. IPAs sometimes get lost in their bitterness,
yeah.
But this one's got like a... I mean, I'm going to sound like a snob here. It's got this almost bouquet of fruit around
yes,
it.
Yes. I find it hits you with floral first, and then there's a like a bitter lingering aftertaste, and that's what I really love about it. Mm. It is one of the most underrated IPAs in South Africa, without a doubt. And,
it's very, very good.
Kidding.
Very, very good. Agar's Brewery, Tomahawk IPA. I was just saying to Richard before the show, though, that it hasn't got the greatest label. If I was in a bottle store looking at this thing, I probably would just look over it because it's got its label is pretty
yeah,
dull.
Yeah, it is. It is. I agree. I mean, like, labeling in the beer industry is such a
so important
cutthroat. Yeah, cutthroat. Mm. Because I mean, if you don't look good on the shelf next to any other beers.
Yeah.
I mean, this label is quite old as well, so it's probably time for an upgrade. The other labels look much nicer. They stand out a bit better. I think it's just a green on the gold that doesn't.
It's like a lime coloured green on gold. Yeah. It's not unattractive, it's just not going to really get noticed.
But
don't let this put you off. If you see this and you're a craft beer aficionado and you don't know about it, then of course grab it. The content is very good.
Yeah,
don't let the label put you off.
Yeah, that's it.
Anyway, that's going to... I was lost for this phrase in the last podcast as well. I'm just going to look it up on the internet. It's going to get the get us talking. Let's put it that way.
Yes.
Lots to talk about this week. And the big news, I guess, is that the internet. And we ran the story this morning on Tech Central. I see some other websites have copied us since. But the internet in South Africa 25 years old as of Saturday, the 12th of November. That marks 25 years to the day, a quarter of a century,
wow.
Since Mike Laurie and his team at the Rhodes Computing Department connected the first IP traffic to the United States to an early internet pioneer based in Portland, Oregon, of all places, by the name of Randy Bush. And they connected the country for the first time to the global internet.
Fascinating.
And this fascinating story. Craig Wilson, the former deputy editor at Tech Central, wrote a great piece on that back in 2011, which I've republished on the website. It's a good read. He went to Pretoria to meet with Mike Laurie, who's now retired. He brought back a great profile piece on Mike and that history, that early history of the internet in South Africa, and how the universities got connected and how they worked with people like Alan Barrett at the University of Natal, and really started to create those first connections before the commercial internet service providers arrived on the scene a year or two or three later.
Sure. I'm just looking at the article too. I mean, the initial speeds were 4.8 and 9,600 bits per second.
Mm.
I mean, that's a 4.8 K modem.
I think that came later, I think, in the early, right at the start.
Oh, really?
Sitting at 70 bits a second, yes, if I remember reading correctly.
And where we are 25 years later, we've got fiber to the home. Yes. Oh, but you don't have yours
yet. My fiber is coming. They finished the installation. I'm waiting for the installer. So in about a week's time, I should have a 100 megabit per second connection.
Oh, fantastic.
Which will be great. Certainly better than 9,600 bits a second.
Oh, yeah.
Go read that story. It's really, really interesting. I'm not going to try and repeat aspects of it here, because no doubt I'll make mistakes.
Mm.
It's quite a complex technical part of the history. There's also a link in there to a paper that Mike wrote back in 1997 now, in which he gave his account of the story, of what happened. Very technical, but if internet history, how the internet came to South Africa is of interest. Now, I think most people in the telecommunications industry would find it a fascinating story. Then go and have a look at it. It's really interesting. Of course, Mike, Craig wrote in that piece back in 2011 that Mike set up his own network in the retirement village that he now lives in. And ensured that all the residents there got cheap access to the internet.
Oh, fantastic.
Because he created a single server with a single high-speed ADSL line coming into the complex, and all the bandwidth then got shared with all the residents across his own network.
Oh, fantastic.
So even in his retirement, he has continued to be intimately involved in the networking industry.
Once a gig, always a gig.
Once
that's
a gig,
for
always
sure.
A gig. Yeah.
Never leaves your system.
Anyway, 25 years. What were you doing 25 years ago, 1991?
Yeah, I was in school somewhere, not knowing much about the internet. The internet only really became a thing for me, I think, in about 95.
Okay.
Where I, you know, kind of got an interest in, you know, computers,
yeah,
and then the internet. And I had a few friends that had dial-up connections. I think it was 24. What was those commercial speeds at first launch? I think it was 24 and 48.
I mean, it wasn't even the internet back then. It was at home. It was Belltel, I think. Well, home internet. When did home internet arrive?
No, I think it was about 96, 97. That I'm
sort of mid to late 90s.
I remember
World Online and
IRC chats. That was a big thing back then.
You're right. Yeah. Belltel was more early 90s, late 80s. Belltel was useless, my word. So slow.
Oh man, we've come a long way, and it's so good to look back and actually see that we have world class internet availability.
Yes. So in 91 I was a first year journalism student. No way our lecturers then or any of the journalism students knew that this thing called the internet was coming and was going to upend their careers. They were, you know, most of them wanted to go work in big newspapers. Little knowing that the internet was going to wreak havoc on that industry, and most of them would never find work there.
Yeah.
And those that did ended up getting retrenched or having to do other things.
All print media, unfortunately.
Yeah. So, we've come a hell of a long way since then. I think the first time I connected to the internet, the proper internet, not just sort of something like a Belltel or an online service, was in 1994 when I started working. I was at Systems Publishers, which was one of the early adopters of the internet. I remember Ronnie Aptiaker, who was founder of Internet Solutions. He personally came down from Rosebank to our offices in Craigle Park to set up the internet connection. And it was on an old Sun box station, or Sun,
wow,
Sun Unix box. And from there, they fed the internet through it was called the Systems Lab. And they fed the internet to our PCs. And
pre-Wi-Fi days, you had to be plugged in?
You had to be physically plugged in. Oh, yeah, yeah. And it was, I'm just trying to think. We were using NCSM Mosaic as the web browser. The web had just launched. It was just starting to take off. Most of the interesting stuff was still on FTP services. And there were things like called Archie and Veronica. I can't even remember what they did exactly. File retrieval protocols, I think.
I remember Archie, yeah.
Yeah. And you know, big websites were things like, I think it was called funet.fi and sunet.c. they were Finnish and Swedish FTP servers where people would post interesting stuff, and you'd literally go on a command line onto these FTP servers in Scandinavia and, you know, try and look for stuff, interesting stuff to find on the internet in those days, and there was very little. And there were so few websites back then. I think IMDb was around. There was no Google.
Yeah.
Google only came in 98. I don't think there were even search engines in 1994. I think those only started emerging in 95, 96. There was very little you could actually do online, but for some reason we were hooked and couldn't stop using it.
Yeah, I remember the days of phoning a friend's home directly to be able to connect to them and transfer files.
Yes.
That's my earliest memory of kind of internet-based technologies. Yes. And it was absolutely fascinating how long you had to wait for anything to happen.
Yes. Well, those pre-ADSL days were really painful. ADSL only came in, I think, in 2001. Mm. Or was it 2003? Could even be 2003. I think it was 2001.
I think you're right. Yeah. I remember starting at...
It was $800 a month, I remember that.
Yeah.
Which was insanely expensive.
I mean, if... Yeah.
For a 512 kilobyte line that... Kilobit line, sorry, that... That had a 3 gig cap.
Oh, yeah, I remember the infamous 3 gig cap. Yes.
That stayed around for a long time. $800 a month, yeah. And I remember I was sharing that connection with a mate of mine who I was staying with at the time... And somehow we managed to. We had a rule: no torrenting, no multimedia downloads, no video, nothing like that. But we always seemed to run out of bandwidth by the middle of the month, and you couldn't even top it up. So yes. You ran out, and you were out of. You were out, that was it. You were offline for the rest of the month.
Scary days. I mean, yeah.
Unbelievable.
And then leased lines, 2 megs, were kind of the thing for big companies, and now you have 100 megs coming to your house.
It's
ridiculous.
Well, it's a gig in effect, but none of the ISPs are really offering gig options.
True.
Except for MWeb, and their package doesn't seem to make a lot of sense at the price. But we've come a long way. Who can you just imagine where we might be 25 years from now?
Oh, that's scary, man.
I think augmented and virtual reality will be indistinguishable from.
Yeah.
I mean, virtual reality will look like real reality if I can use that. That phrase. Fortunes will have come and gone. Apple may not. Apple may not be around anymore. Today, it's the biggest tech company in the world.
Everything's going to be connected, without a doubt. Everything will be connected.
Yeah. Without it. Yeah, absolutely. Every device will have a connection.
It'll be the future's future. We'll have flying cars and automated driving machines.
we'll certainly have self-driving cars.
Oh yeah.
I mean, that's here in a few years. But we'll probably have quite advanced. Question is, in 25 years, will you still be allowed to drive your car?
Maybe they'll have
designated areas for people who want to actually go and drive.
Yeah, that's only reserved for track days.
Yes.
Yeah. No, I don't think you'll ever get away from man's need to drive a machine.
Mm.
It will definitely be factions of that.
I hope not, actually. I hope not. I like driving.
Yeah, me too. No, yeah. Definitely. Mm. I've done a lot of Ubers recently when I was without a car, and it's just not the same.
Anyway. So, I went to a very interesting launch this week. A company called Fed Group. Have you ever heard of Fed Group?
Yes. Don't know them well, but I know of them.
They're an interesting company. They're family-owned. They're not listed. They're a wealth creation, wealth management company, as far as I can tell. But they've done some interest. They've come up with this interesting. I just want to get the story up on my screen here so I can get this absolutely right. But they've come up with an interesting new model, and they've started with. They're a financial services provider. That's how they describe themselves. They've launched a new project that allows members of the public. I'm just reading here, to own one or more solar panels that then form part of a larger facility located on the roofs of commercial and industrial buildings, and then they then earn rent from those based on the amount of power that their solar panels generate. Now, they've run the numbers, and they think that you're looking at an 11% a year return over the 20-year lifespan of the project.
Hmm.
So it's a very different way of simply putting your money in the bank or buying shares on the stock market, or buying any other financial instrument. It's actually buying a physical thing, which is then converted into wealth through its lease to landlords, who then pay you based on the amount of electricity that your panels generate. Now, it's a very, very interesting way of
very interesting concept of
making money, and it could work quite well, especially in a market like South Africa where there's so much sunshine.
Oh, yeah.
Especially in the interior of South Africa.
But do they talk about how they'll feed that back into the grid? Isn't that always the contentious issue? Or?
Well, I presume that will come later, but they're not feeding it into the grid at the moment. They're feeding it into the buildings on which these solar panels are being installed. So it's the landlord paying for that access to the electricity. So it's an interesting model. I presume that feeding into the grid is something that will come. I mean, I know there are plans to allow that at some point. I'm not sure what the current state of play is there, and maybe we should speak to someone about that, because it'd be an interesting subject. And I'm not actually sure what's holding it up. I think they're starting to do it in Cape Town, if I'm not mistaken.
Cape Town.
but a very interesting model, and they say that this is not only going to apply to the solar panels, but this could apply to just about anything. They were reluctant at the launch to talk about what they've got planned next, what products they could be looking at next, but interesting model. I'm almost tempted to go to their website and buy one of their solar panels just to try it out.
Well, do they give costings of the solar panels?
I haven't had a look on their website yet. I'm not sure if it's live yet. I think it is live. They offer a guaranteed residual value of 1,000 rand. So at the end of the 20-year term, owners either take physical ownership of the panel or they can sell it back with a guaranteed residual of 1,000 rand. But if you go to Fed Group, you should find the pricing there. Rachel's just seeing if you can dig that up. But really interesting model. It's like nothing I've come across, so it's really innovative. They claim it's a world first. I don't know if that's true, but they claim it is.
Fascinating. I mean, it's about time that we really start looking at ways in which we can implement and monetize this, or at least bring the costs down, because that's always been...
And it's an interesting way of getting the cost down for the landlord as well, because it's being paid for. So this could actually... It has the potential, I'd imagine, to really rapidly expand the installation of solar panels in South Africa. Which would be fantastic, because it's a clean source of energy. It reduces reliance on Eskom, which is, their grid is under pressure. I think it's fantastic.
I've gone to the website now. So as you click in and you click buy from the main page, you select the site first, and there's five sites up here.
Yeah.
Cresta, Fricker Road, Commons Building, and so on.
Yeah.
If I click on Cresta, they say there's 515 panels remaining. So you obviously buy one of the panels that they want to install, right? It says here 5,200 rand per panel. Yeah, so it's 5,200. Yeah, it's about
5 grand a panel. 5,200.
Yeah. So can I get your credit quite quickly? I'll buy 14. 72,000.
All 515 of them.
I'm sure it's tax deductible.
How much would it cost to buy 515 as a matter of interest? I think you can type it there.
Just
2.7 million rand. Yeah, here's my credit card.
I think daily limit might restrict us.
I think I might get a call from
very
my bank.
Interesting.
5,200 rand. I mean, that's not a huge amount of money to invest, and they say you'll get an 11% return on that per year.
So
that's what, just running off the top of my head, it's almost 600 rand a year.
Is this like crowdsourcing for the hardware?
I don't think so.
In a different model? No, where you buy something that... Because you're not going to have it physically on your roof. You're contributing towards...
You own it, but it'll be on someone else's roof, and you'll probably never see it. You'll just get the return.
Yes, exactly.
You'll just get the money back every year. Now, the question is, does the company guarantee a return? Probably not. So you'd have to believe that they're going to generate a return of approximately 11%.
Look, I think one thing is certain, at least in my opinion, that I think the early adopters in this is obviously going to be a sweet spot with the cost of the hardware. I mean, if the hardware drops significantly, it might be an issue. But the early adopters are the ones that's going to be the ones that's able to lead the solar panel fight, you know.
Yes.
Because there's going to be a big demand for more electricity, and if those guys are ready to provide... It makes a lot of sense to be a part of that. Interesting.
Well, worth checking out. If you're interested, the website is fedgroup.co.za, but there's also an article on Tech Central with more details, so go check that out. very tempted to just buy one and see how it goes. Might do it this weekend.
Do it. Do it, Duncan. I want to see how it works as well.
All right. I think we need to take an ad break. We will be back right after these messages.
Hello world. Hello information. Hello uploads and downloads. Hello streaming videos and low latency. Hello blogs and vlogs. Hello crystal clear video calls. Hello increased productivity. Hello online learning. Hello cloud. Hello long lost friends and missed connections. Hello limitless possibilities and instant gratification. Say hello to premium high speed fiber from Vox Telecom. Pleasure guaranteed. Visit voxtelecom.co.za for more information.
Chicken or beef? Chicken or beef?
Chicken.
There are so many companies offering fiber at the moment, but with Vox Telecom's premium high-speed fiber, you'll be joining the Smile High Club.
Duck or salmon, sir?
We call it business class fiber. We guarantee our uptime and can tailor our services to suit your needs and budget. Say hello to business class fiber from Vox Telecom. Visit voxtelecom.co.za for more information.
Well, welcome back to the show. How's it, Richard?
How's it?
So, Stephen Fulbert, did you ever meet him?
No, I didn't.
No, he was the chairman of ICASA, the communications regulator, between 2010 and 2015. We broke the news this morning that he had sadly passed away on Thursday. He was 76 years old, just celebrated his 76th birthday, actually. He led ICASA for over a five-year period, appointed in 2010 by the former communications minister, General Sipiwe Nyanda. He had a mixed track record. Critics have said he had a bit of a lackluster record, didn't achieve a huge amount. Probably his biggest achievement was termination rates, call termination rates, mobile call termination rates, getting those down, which had an impact on retail rates. Although the process was badly managed, and in the end the court actually found that ICASA's regulations were invalid, but decided they would stand anyway in the public interest. So they kind of got lucky there, I suppose. But always a very affable, friendly chap. Even when he was criticizing you, he was very good-natured about it, and always friendly. He was very old school. I think it could be argued that he was too old to be leading a regulator that covers a young industry, technology. But he always joked about that as well. Joked about his age, made light of it. But he was appointed at the age of almost 70 to that crucial role. He took over from Paris Mashile, who's back at ICASA as an ordinary councillor, not as chairman. But passing away this week, well known in the industry, I'm sure a lot of people are going to miss him. Anyway, let's move on to more positive news. Very interesting company called BrandsEye. I always struggle to describe them. I guess they're a social media analytics company. They look at social media, Twitter, Facebook, and others, and they look for trends in that data. They almost mine big data in a way.
But
specializing in social media, and they mine that data for trends. They work with clients, and they can provide insight to their commercial clients on what consumers are saying about them, what consumers are thinking about them.
I used them before, and they're very, very good. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. I think they came out of Quirk, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
A couple of months ago, we ran a story on before the UK voted about whether to leave the European Union or not, and all the polls were saying that the Brexit vote was going to fail. All the polls. And they came out and they did the study of social media, and they said, based on what we're seeing, based on what people on the ground are saying on social media, we believe that the UK is going to vote for Brexit, despite the fact that every single major poll says this is not going to happen. And they were right. Now, maybe they just got lucky. So I was interested if they were going to do it again with the US election coming up. And they did. And a day or two, I think it was 3 days before the election, they sent to Tech Central an article on their views based on their analysis of social media and what's going to happen in the US. Now, once again, all the major polls were saying that Hillary Clinton was going to win the election. And they put out this thing saying that, sorry, everything we're seeing on social media is actually pointing to Donald Trump winning.
Hmm.
Now, even I didn't think this was going to happen because I didn't think Donald Trump was going to win.
Yeah, yeah.
And, of course, what happened?
Yeah.
The Orange Menace is going to be Trump in the White House in a few weeks. So it's really interesting. Now, I was joking. It's a pity you can't apply the same thing to the horse races or the lotto.
The lotto numbers.
Because, I mean, that's a game of pure chance. But it's very interesting. And I think that people should start paying more attention, particularly around elections. Mm. People should be paying more attention to this. And I'd like to see, in fact, these guys did some stuff around the South African local government elections on the 3rd of August as well. And they also predicted that the big cities were going to fall to coalitions.
Interesting.
So maybe there's something to this. Maybe then, you know, maybe it's not, I don't know, what do you call it, pseudoscience? Or
yeah, yeah.
Maybe there's actually something to it. And I'm going to be watching very carefully the analysis that this company does of future referendums, future elections.
Definitely.
I think there may be something to this.
Yeah, and I think that, I mean, if you look at online chatting, people obviously barring any organization paying for fake mentions and comments.
Yeah.
But I think there's just too many people with an opinion online, and then if you can get the right aggregation of the right comments and content, it needs to point to the true voice.
Yes,
it's very interesting. Although having said that, you know, there's a lot of analytics companies around the world that touted they're the best, and they totally got it wrong.
So
I think maybe they got that little X factor. It's interesting.
Yeah, very interesting. Anyway, last news item I wanted to look at this week was some news that came out of the States that Twitter's chief operating officer and head of sales has resigned. It sent Twitter's share price lower. And there's been nothing but negative news around this company over the last year. People saying now that the CEO, whose name has just slipped my mind, Jack Dorsey.
Yeah.
I was going to say Ev Williams, but it's not Ev. Jack Dorsey, that he really needs to give up the CEO. Or he needs to focus on one of the businesses, either Square or Twitter. He of course, is heads up both companies at the moment. And questions are rising about the company strategy. Now, with the head of sales and chief operating officer resigning, what does it say about the future of the company? We're a sample of two here, Recha, but... How is your...
I love Twitter. It's okay. My main source of any information. Because I find by following the right amount of people, the right people, you can get breaking news. Even, you know, at the moment it kind of gets announced or breaks.
That's so true. Like this afternoon with this resignation.
Exactly. I find the conversation on Twitter, and I say user word conversation probably incorrectly, but the conversation on Twitter I find is a lot more, especially because the people you're following is people that you genuinely respect or want to follow, you want their opinion.
Yes.
Facebook is slowly starting to get there for me, but Facebook still has too many other things, you know, kind of the family and friends aspect, which you can't really bring into this conversation.
Facebook's more of a personal network. It's more of a family friends where you share your holiday snaps or you, whereas Twitter's a more of a current affairs news business. Driven thing. It's quite a different beast.
And it's got very... And again, by following the right people, you get the right... Because it's of the nature of the platform with limited characters.
Yeah.
You know, you don't get a lot of noise and... Or I find you don't get a lot of noise. Mm. You know, it's just...
As long as you follow the right people, you know.
Yes. I mean, and to that point, you know, using TweetDeck to me is imperative. I can't use Twitter without TweetDeck.
Yeah.
Because of the way that the information is spread out, you know, you need to be able to either capture streams or multiple stream and be able to view it.
I prefer, that's interesting actually. I prefer Facebook as a mobile platform, Twitter I prefer as a desktop platform. I don't like it on mobile.
And you don't get this experience on mobile.
You don't. TweetDeck is fantastic software, but the other interesting thing I think is that in TweetDeck you're getting immediacy, whereas on the mobile app they Twitter curates the tweets, so they're showing while you were away. Actually, I don't want to know what happened while I was away. I want to know what's happening right now.
Exactly.
How do I get rid of this?
And I'll scroll down when I want to get to an hour past. I agree with that.
Yes. So I don't think they're doing it quite right on mobile. I think Twitter is an immediate platform. You hear, oh my word, Brian Molefe stepped down at ESCOM. Jump onto Twitter. You want to see what people are saying about it.
Exactly, exactly. And I think, again, because of the 140 character, it's a lot quicker. People don't have to, you know, you don't necessarily think too much about what you want to say, because you either link to more information or you put a statement out there, which could be done in 140 characters.
Yes.
I'm a big Twitter fan, and I really hope that they can pull themselves together. And firstly, not make this thing too complicated. I mean, I use a lot of Twitter ads as well, which I think from a business point of view is also, if you can do it right, you're hitting the right.
Do you find they work for you?
Yeah, I think
better than Facebook ads?
No, Facebook ads are still better simply because the markets that I'm trying to attract, you know, on my other day job. So there, the audience is more Facebook. But if you're looking at the media kind of real content generating, if you've got a company that needs to push a message in that platform or in that to that audience, Twitter ads can work very well.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, I'm also a complete tweet deck addict. As you know, Rachid, I've got a 3 monitor set up on my desk, and my right hand monitor is dedicated to TweetDeck.
It's a sight to behold. If you haven't seen it, get Duncan to post a photograph on Twitter about it, because it's well worth.
Well, let me describe it. On the left and right, I've got two 24-inch 1080p Samsung monitors, which I need to upgrade at some point. And in the middle, I've got a 40-inch Philips 4K monitor, which is just beautiful.
Yeah, I know.
At some point, I'm going to have to put 40-inch 4Ks on the left and right too, I suppose.
Has your wife said anything about your love for this monitor? Because, I mean, there's a grey line.
I haven't made love to it yet.
No, of course, that's a grey line. But
I didn't put the word yet in there.
You can bring it to bed and say, we're just watching Netflix, babe.
My precious.
It is that beautiful.
Yeah. Anyway, so Twitter's not dying, according to this sample of two people.
No, not at all.
But Twitter, you need to sort out your mobile app.
The question is, what could Twitter become? I mean, it's either going to go one of two ways. It's either going to become bloatware if they do the wrong things to it. Or if they can direct this thing, because this is not like any other startup, like any other social network. It's really got a niche carved out for itself already.
Yes.
And I think it's a very fragile niche if you mess with it. Yes. You know, the 140 character limit, if they increase that, is it going to ruin the platform? You know, that's debatable.
Yeah.
I think that's why it's such a fragile social network that I don't think they should mess around with too much. But the question is, do the shareholders make money? I don't know if they do.
Yeah. I mean, it's still got an incredible valuation. I think they're worth about $20 billion.
Sure.
But it's nothing compared to Facebook.
But you know, valuation, exactly. Yeah,
Facebook's what, worth $400 billion, I think.
But I love Twitter. Don't go anywhere, please.
Right, that's our news this week. Our winner and loser, we'll get through those very quickly because we kind of covered them while we were talking today. Our winner this week is Brandseye, simply for defying all the polls, not only predicting Brexit correctly, but predicting that the Orange Menace would make it into the White House. I'm very perturbed by the whole thing, I must say, but let's not go there.
On a side note, on the Trump victory, if you want to get the best out of this whole Trump victory, this is not a paid for endorsement, go to Rock and Mamas and order the Trump burger. It is wonderful.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah, wonderful.
Okay.
And it's got a little hidden surprise if you like spicy foods.
Oh, chili in the middle.
Chili. Lots of chili on top.
Oh, good stuff. I must go and try that. And our loser this week, Brian Molefe, the CEO of ESCOM, who has fallen on his sword and will leave ESCOM on the 1st of January. As Hilton Tarrant tweeted a little bit earlier this afternoon, if you're innocent, why quit?
Yeah. I guess it'll all come out eventually.
It will. It will. Indeed. But let's hope this isn't a preamble to Brian Molefe taking over as the finance minister.
Please, no.
Anyway, what's your pick this week?
So I discovered a very cool service that launched locally, and it's very similar to a massive, or in my opinion, a very massive international startup or American startup that happened a year or two ago. You know DollarShaveClub.com?
I've heard the name.
So if you haven't seen or heard about this, go to YouTube, Google Dollar Shave Club, and watch their kind of promo video when they started the company. But essentially, the South African version of that, and I was for a long time been hoping that something like this would launch in South Africa.
Yeah.
It's called shaveunion.co.za. And essentially the model is simple. You pay X amount per month, every 2 months or every 3 months, and you get razor blades delivered to your door. That's not the big name brands. And as you know, if you use Gillette and all of those things, which I do, it's pricey.
It's very expensive.
So I saw these guys pop up. I think they literally launched a week ago. I thought it was, I like to experiment with these things, so I placed an order on Wednesday. And I'm very impressed. So
I'm a bit worried because you've got quite a heavy 5 o'clock shadow going on.
No, I haven't used the blades, but I have checked them out. I mean, it literally just arrived today. But everything I've seen about this is pretty impressive, and I'll feedback next week. But
right.
From what I've seen, I think this is definitely going to be a winner.
Okay.
So when you want to sign up, you've got three options. If you shave 5 to 7 times per week,
yeah.
If you shave 2 to 4 days per week, or if you shave 1 day per week. So I'm kind of in that category.
Okay.
You either pay, so that there's a flat fee of $169. You're either going to pay $169 every month, every 2 months, or every 3 months, depending on how regularly you want your blades.
Okay.
The process so far has been very slick. When I placed the order, I got an SMS to say that they've got it, it's being shipped. When it was shipped, they told me it was on its way. Mm. And a day later, I actually received the device. You can choose from one of three blades as well, which is quite cool. You know, different colors, a matte black, orange and silver, and a blue and silver.
Okay.
And I went for the black one. You use a razor, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so you kind of understand a good quality what it is.
Yeah.
Now have a look at this one. I mean, that is not bad quality. So I've just handed...
I suppose you need to test it, though.
No, you need to test it. But if you look at the quality of the blades,
yeah.
I mean, it's got the four... What's it? Five blades, I think. It's
blades,
got a little
yeah.
strip up there.
Yeah.
A blade isn't a complete... You don't... like the Dollar Shave Club video says, if you watch it, it's quite funny.
Yeah.
You know, your grandfather had one blade and polio, and he was fine. you know, you only need something that's got that's sharp enough for you to use for a few shaves, and
yeah.
then you chuck it away.
And
spending 200 rand on blades isn't everybody's cup of tea. So,
yeah.
I'm very impressed so far. What I got was obviously the shaver, the shaving unit with a blade, and then a pack of three extra blades.
Okay.
Like
so that comes all for $169.
Yeah, for $169,
okay.
And every 3 months I will get a new set of. I think I get a new shaver and blades, but I could be wrong, but I will let you guys know. But I'm quite impressed with the whole package so far. And like I said,
you're definitely going to have to report back in next episode about
whether
that's
good. I will.
Yeah.
If you look at the blade, it's a plastic blade. It's not as complicated as the Gillette blades.
Yeah.
But it's got enough play in it.
Yeah.
It's got a little wax strip, a little moisturizer strip on top.
Yes.
But I mean, yeah, these blades are, it's essentially a replica of what a Gillette blade would look like.
Mm.
I am very impressed so far, and I think the quality of the product speaks for itself too.
It looks good.
But
that's a good idea. Do you know who the guys are behind it?
I don't. I said, I've only discovered these guys 2 days ago. I did did some bracket search to see who the actual person is.
Yeah.
I found that out, but I don't know what kind of other things are involved in.
Okay.
But yeah, very slick setup, very slick system.
Okay, pretty cool. That's a nice pick.
I will bet the refund on this that it's going to be a good play. How about
cool. My pick this week is actually related to podcasts. I've been looking for a good podcast player for my Android device for quite a long time. And I've been using a couple of them, and I haven't really been happy. I've been using free ones. And I've come across something called Pocket Casts. It's not free. The Android version is in the Play Store for about 38 Rand, which is not much, so that's why I didn't think twice about purchasing it. It's available on all the other platforms, all the major platforms, Windows Mobile even. It's available on iOS, and it's available on for the web. The only downside is you have to pay for it for each platform. If you use both the web version and the Android version, you'd have to pay for both. The web version is $9, so it's a bit pricier as well. I think that if you're looking for a podcast player, you tend to listen to podcasts when you're in the car. Like, or at least that's what I do. So I don't need to listen to podcasts on my computer. So purchasing the app is enough for me. And what I like about it is it's really beautifully designed. It's designed with Google's Material Design, so it looks good on your Android device. And it's so simple to use. I find a problem with so many of these podcast apps is firstly they're ugly, and secondly they're really difficult to use. This one is so simple, and I searched for some pretty obscure podcasts. You know, it's American software. Search Tech Central, found the Talk Central podcast, no problem. So I've added a bunch of podcasts. I'm listening to so many podcasts now. There's so many great podcasts out there.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm enjoying TED Radio Hour. I'm doing something called The Infinite Monkey Cage from BBC Radio 4, which talks about science. The Verge cast I listen to from time to time, which is obviously the one done by The Verge in the US. Bloomberg Technologies recently launched one called Decrypted, which is quite good. Listen to old favorites like Windows Weekly, This Week in Tech, MacBreak Weekly. Quite enjoy some of the Cliff Central podcasts. So Gareth's guests are quite good. I like the Renegade Reports, just simply because it's completely politically incorrect. And the Daily Maverick show is quite good as well. It's a cool app. If you're looking for a new podcast app, you don't like the one you're currently using, or you're new into podcasts and you're looking for something that works on your phone, again, you're going to need to pay for separate versions if you use different platforms. But I think most people won't.
The days of free apps, I don't know. I would much rather pay for something and know it's going to be a properly supported app that does what it needs to
exactly.
do. Exactly. That's kind of free.
You know, as long as it's not too expensive, I don't have a problem. I mean, I use the Nine email system, NINE, Exchange Mail Client.
Yes.
That's excellent. I think I paid $100 for that originally. That was before Microsoft Outlook came to the to the Play Store, but fantastic email app and worth supporting the developer. And I think the same with this Pocket Casts app. So if you're looking for a decent podcast player, go check it out. And make sure that Talk Central is the first podcast you add.
Oh, yeah.
Rachel, should we do our quiz results?
Yes, let's do so. The first question. Who is the man now retired, often credited with bringing the internet to South Africa? The answer, Mike Laurie.
Question two. Vodacom and MTN this week said they'll be launching what type of networks commercially in 2017? Very interesting. Narrowband Internet of Things networks. So they're going to be using their existing license spectrum allocations to launch these networks called NB-IoT, specifically designed for low-powered IoT devices.
Fantastic. Yeah. It's nice to have that on a separate bandwidth location. It's exciting times. Are you ready for the Internet of Things revolution?
Yeah, I can't wait to attach something to my dogs. I know where it is.
Yeah, same with my cats. I can't wait to see where those little things go. Anyway, third question. Which Silicon Valley billionaire has become an active backer of Donald Trump, angering many of his peers in the U.S. tech industry? The answer, Peter Thiel.
Which South African, of course, he made his money through through PayPal.
Elon Musk. Yeah.
Which South African social media analytics company correctly predicted Donald Trump's victory against all popular polls suggesting the opposite? And of course, the answer is Brand's Eye.
The last question: ex-ICASA chairman Stephen Gube died this week. He was appointed to the position in 2010 by which communications minister? The answer: Sepiwe Nyanda.
That's our show. As always, if you've got any feedback, we love to hear your feedback. Our email address is info@techcentral.co.za. Until next time, from Richard and myself, take care. Ciao.